As BFBS reflects on 75 years of our National Health Service, we want to shine a light on a highly skilled minority of our armed forces, healthcare professionals who give up their spare time as RAF Medical Service Reservists. I've been finding out where these lines of work overlap and what lessons can be taken from the front line to the NHS.
Okay, my name is Diane Alibone. I'm a sergeant with 4626 Aeromedical Evacuation Squadron. I'm a intensive care nurse in the NHS in my civilian life, and I translate this into the military by being part of the CCAST team, which is the Critical Care Air Support team.
Okay, CCAST, Critical Care Air Support Team, is that right?
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
So basically, ITU in the air.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like it's pretty intense. So, can you give us some examples of what sort of things you do?
Basically, what we do is we are tasked to fly anywhere in the world that we're required to collect a level 2 or level 3 patient, somebody that needs a lot more care than just a general aeromed. We stabilise them and then bring them back to an intensive care in the UK. And our mission is to provide the same level of care in the air that they would expect to get in a land-based intensive care.
Okay. Let's talk about the training for performing that very action. You know, from the NHS, I imagine, you know, you've obviously got excellent training that you've brought into the military. How does the military fine-tune that for this kind of flying?
So you do an intense level of preparation before you're able to go on call with the team. So that involves doing aeromed ground, aeromed flying. So that's all the aeromedical evacuation side. And then there is a specialist CCAST course, which gets you familiar with all the equipment, the roles, the routines, and you do a practice of going and packaging, going to wherever it is that you're going to go and get your patient, package them up, ready to be put on the back of the aircraft, and what scenarios that you might encounter when you're up in the air.
Okay.
So it's all a lot of practice.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're a very, very busy person in both your civvy job and your role in the military. So why sign up? Why be a reservist?
It gives you the best of both worlds. So I've got very transferable skills to take into the military, but they then provide me with skills like transferring of critically ill patients. I can take those skills back to my civilian role, and it's just a lot of fun.
From across the board, as we reflect on 75 years of our NHS, most people that work in their day job that are working for the Royal Air Force in reservist capacity, you know, within the field of medicine, they've all said the collaboration between these two services, it's wonderful. Both have got something to give to the other. Would you agree with that?
Oh, pretty much so. Oh, totally agree with that. Yeah, because you just do get all the interesting military skills and the camaraderie of being with your colleagues, and those team building skills and leadership that you learn in the military are very transferable back to the NHS.
Okay, so my name's Jane Lumpkin, and I'm RAF reservist nurse. I'm sergeant, recently promoted to sergeant, and I've been with the military since, I believe it's coming up to 10 years now. Next year will be my 10th year. Before that, I didn't have a military bone in my body, and I still think I don't have a military bone in my body, but I try.
Well, you certainly wouldn't have been promoted to sergeant if you were doing all that badly, so you're obviously doing something right.
That's true.
Now, Jane, let's have a little bit of a chat about what you do within the NHS as well. I mean, two incredibly busy roles that you're balancing.
Yeah, that's very true. As we all know, it's been incredibly busy, incredibly stressful, really challenging for everybody, but I still really enjoy that role as well. I worked for the NHS for many, many years. I actually qualified in 1994 as a nurse, so that's a very long time ago. And I've always worked, my background is ED or accident and emergency. That's what I went into as soon as I qualified. I went straight into that speciality, and I love it. And I'm very confident in that role because that's what I've done.
Okay. Let's talk about those crossover skills that you've gained working alongside our armed forces in your civilian role, but also when you have mobilized to, you know, pretty spiky situations like Turkey. The people must have been relieved to see you there. It was just terrible. We sat and watched on our televisions and just, you know, your heart broke for these poor people that had lost everything.
Yes, that was probably the most challenging bit, I would imagine, really, if I think about it. It was very, very humbling experience, but actually a really rewarding experience at the same time. Because, yeah, you're right, these people were deprived of everything that they'd had. You know, yet the day before it was horrendous, and it was just a real privilege and a real honor for us to be able to go in and offer what little we could. And it actually put a lot of things into perspective, because, you know, we kind of like sit in our warm homes with a roof over our head, watching the TV and the horrific pictures on there, and we can't really imagine what it's like unless you've actually been in a situation like that. And so to actually go out there and to see it firsthand was very, very, very humbling and very emotional for all of us. And we were desperate to just help these people, just even just to offer an arm around the shoulder and, you know, and a hug and anything that we could, just to be able to, you know, help them in some way, however small. But they were so grateful. They almost turned it round back on us, in that they were so kind and they were so lovely. They were thanking us and hugging us. They were offering us tea and food, and they had very little, but they were so generous towards us and so lovely. It just made it even more of a humbling experience for us. And the stories, obviously, that they had were just, a lot of us were in tears. Many times.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Jane. That's it's really beautiful. I'm really touched to hear your story. Let me start with this. If you were to pick a career highlight of all the things that you've done in your working life, what would it be, Jane?
I would say Turkey, because it's the most recent, but it was the most humbling. And it was where I felt, although we didn't do a huge skill set of work, the impact that it actually had on us and on the people that we were working with, the individuals that we're working with, was immense.
So I'm a specialist practice nurse in primary care. So I generally work in the medical facility, in a med centre.
I'm guessing by that it's subject to change. No day's the same, right?
No day's the same. And usually you can be anywhere else. So you may be in the role one, you may be out in the fields, you may be in the med centre, but it's not prescriptive. It's not always the same. Being a reservist, you're then able to, as a skilled professional, be utilised in different areas when necessary.
Was that the attraction of coming into the reserves?
Absolutely. When you're in your normal civilian job, you get sort of into a routine where you're doing the same thing all the time, and you almost want to develop, expand, not sort of like vertically but also horizontally. So coming into the military, that was one of the attraction for me, is being able to do different things that's not necessarily just about nursing.
Well, I mean, let's talk about this as we reflect on 75 years of our NHS. Mm-hmm. You've brought a lot of skills from the NHS into the military, but vice versa. So how does that kind of work?
So what I found with the NHS, which is different to the military, there's an expectation as a nurse that you will be a leader, but there isn't that much investment in leadership training. Where on the flip side of that, the military is heavily laden with leadership skills and training. So that development that you get from the military is then transferred back into the NHS to make sure patients are looked after carefully. And also you extend that to your colleagues as well. So you give them direction to those who are under your sort of like supervision. You're able to manage them more effectively because you then become more self-aware as to who you are as a leader. And that's what's really great about marrying the two together. There is balances in that mutual relationship between the military and the NHS.
It sounds like a brilliant collaboration. It's easy to see when you put it like that, Mash. Let's have a little bit of a chat about career highlights from the armed forces, because you've been able to do some pretty cool stuff.
Yes. I love it. So I, for the first time, I was deployed to the Middle East in Oman in February of this year. And one of the things I liked about that is being able to
intermingle with other sort of parts of the RAF that I would not have otherwise been exposed to, like speaking to meteorology, being with the Jengos, and all of that was really impressive. But I think the highlight for me was being rescued in the desert by the special forces. That was just amazing. That was beyond my expectation. It was really, really good. There was a sense of trepidation, to be honest with you, even though it wasn't real and it was sort of like an enacted situation, you could feel the potential fear of being behind enemy lines and being rescued, and that almost adrenaline that got you going, feeling this could potentially be for real. So it was really a very good experience for me to understand or feel some of it. By no means it would be the real thing, but it was just great to experience it.
Do you know what, Matt? I'm so glad you clarified, because before you alluded to the fact that you were on an X, I thought, oh my goodness, what's happened? Did you get lost? Well, where'd we go wrong here? But I think as well, for a medical professional like yourself to have that understanding of not what potentially happens to a patient that you might come across, to their body, but also to their mind, I can imagine that was really insightful.
It really was, when we did a debrief afterwards, and my heart was really racing. And I think someone, you probably think, but hold on a minute, you know this is contrived, you know it's not a real situation. However, being in that situation, I tell you, you feel almost as if just hearing that helicopter in the distance and knowing it's coming for you, everything in you becomes alive. So your heart, your sweat, you're bothered, but suddenly there's an essence of hope that someone's coming to get you. And I felt that even though it wasn't real.
But it sounds like you're loving your reservist career. I mean, you're obviously very passionate about both of the jobs that you do. What's next for you, Mash?
In terms of progression for the NHS, there's a number of things we're looking towards in terms of leadership and in going up the career ladder, which thankfully that's to do with how I've become confident and bold in my approach to nursing and people management. And that was just being in the reserves. That's helped me to develop that skills, which I want to use. In my reserve role, I think there's still lots for me to do and lots to experience. And I'm taking it as it comes. There isn't this end goal that I'm looking towards. I feel like I'm very versatile and very flexible. So wherever I'm needed, I'm happy to go.
Well, I wish you all the very best. Corporal Michelle Banks, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today, Mash. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So my name is Suki Sera. I'm a flight lieutenant with the RAF Medical Services, and my job role is that I'm a medical support officer pharmacist.
Okay, Suki. So, I mean, that's what you do within the Royal Air Force. So what do you do on Civvy Street as well?
So I'm a pharmacist as my civilian role, and I recently qualified as a doctor. So I'm also a junior doctor, so dual registered pharmacist and doctor in my civilian work.
Goodness me. Well, many congratulations. I don't know where you found the time to go and do that with your reservist career and all the study that must have been required. Your family must be so proud of you, Suki.
I hope so. I hope so.
Oh, amazing. All right. Well, so we are marking and we are celebrating 75 years of our NHS. Let's start with talking about your civilian work, because obviously incredibly busy role. And I think as well, many would agree that the role of pharmacist has gotten extremely busy as well with the, with what's happening in our NHS. So tell me a little bit about that.
Sure. So currently I work for a group of GP practices in London, and I'm their practice pharmacist there. So essentially I see patients dealing with sort of minor ailments. I deal with chronic disease management, so medicines management, and I also do a bit of quality improvement, so audits and making sure that what we prescribe is appropriate for our patients.
Okay. And how did you become a reservist?
So I attested back in 2018. And I applied the same way everybody else applies. So a lot of us sort of think about joining the military, and eventually we sort of take the leap as reservists. And initially I worked in logistics. So I was a logistics mover for a while. And that's because there was a period of time where the RAF didn't have pharmacists. And so there wasn't a role I could go into that was the same as my civilian role. So I did that for a little while. And then in 2020, the RAF decided they needed a pharmacist. So I applied for that and then I commissioned and became a medical support officer pharmacist.
Wow. Okay. Now, two very, very busy job roles. What crossover skills has the military given you to take back to the NHS and maybe vice versa?
Mm-hmm. So absolutely. The two things really complement each other. Obviously, working in the military involves a lot of pressure. It involves working very closely with other people. And so, definitely teamwork and camaraderie are a large part of that. And obviously that has some crossover with working in the NHS, which is also, high pressure environment. You're working in multidisciplinary teams where there's many different people with many different personalities and different job roles. So two things definitely go hand in hand. And also the NHS really does appreciate service people and the skills and the sort of hardworking ethic that we bring across to the NHS, and that's invaluable there. So the two things I would say are very complementary, and they definitely one helps the other.
All right, Suki, now as we celebrate 75 years of our NHS, what's one thing that we can do as listeners, whether we're civilian, whether we're military, what's one thing that we can do to support our fabulous NHS, our sister service?
I mean, I definitely think, amongst the population, everybody loves the NHS. There's a lot of respect for the NHS and its history, that it's something that we're all almost part of, just whether we're service users or we work within it. And we all use it, whether, obviously nobody wants to become sick or unwell, but we all use its services. And I suppose that respect for people that work within it, although I'd say that most of the population does that anyway. So I would say appreciation for its people and the people that work for it and within it.
Hi, I'm Flight Sergeant Andrew Wilf-Williams. I'm a paramedic in Civvy Street and also a paramedic on 4626 Squadron, RAF Bryce Norton.
Amazing, Wilf. It sounds like you are very busy. Let's start with your civilian role as we reflect on 75 years of the NHS. How long have you been a paramedic for?
Joined the ambulance service in 2001 and qualified as a paramedic in 2004. Yeah, it's got its good points and its bad points. I think the variety is one of the good things. The frustrations of born out of the current climate where everyone's queuing to get into hospital.
And it must feel really good when you know that you've made such a difference for people.
Yeah, I mean, I find it very hard to sort of take that sort of critique on me. I, as far as I can see, I'm doing my job. I'm doing what I'm trained to do and paid to do.
All right, well, let's talk about what you volunteer to do with the incredible 4626 Squadron. So give us a bit of an overview of the squadron, first of all, and then your role within.
Yeah, so 462 Squadron is one of a number of RAF reserve squadrons in Britain at the moment. It provides medical staff of any trade to either backfill the regulars or indeed carry out taskings independently of the regulars.
Now, you've been to some pretty spicy locations. You were a MERT paramedic on Op Herrick. Wilf, tell me a little bit about that experience.
So I deployed twice on the MERT on Op Herrick as a paramedic. That was 2010 and 2013. Yeah, how to describe that? Probably the worst and yet the best experience of my life. Never been so scared, never laughed so much. From a work point of view, it provided me with a set of skills as a paramedic that enabled me to take forward and bring back to the NHS.
What skills has the military given you that has progressed your career within the NHS, apart from going off on operations?
War is obviously horrible, but it does provide the opportunity to learn an awful lot about and make advances about medical things. What we brought back from Afghanistan, well, and Iraq really, is the use of tourniquets, the use of hemostatic agents. These pieces of equipment now have been introduced on the front line ambulances all over the UK.
As we reflect on 75 years of our NHS, and, like you've rightly pointed out, Wilf, there are some things that are very frustrating. What can people do that are listening to this today that would actually help our NHS? If you could wave a magic wand and get a message across to people, say, look, if you do this, it's going to help our NHS. What would it be?
As a country, we don't rely on our own judgment quite so much as we perhaps used to. Whereas in the past, certainly in my parents' era, they would just get on with things. I think perhaps now there's almost an inclination to ring someone to get assurance. Am I doing the right thing? So if we could take that little bit of ownership and responsibility back for ourselves and perhaps try and seek the alternative pathways rather than use 999 as the default, maybe that would improve things a little.